Welcome to Ripstop on the Record, the podcast for makers, by makers, where we talk about all things MYOG. Brought to you by Ripstop by the Roll.
I think it's good, right?
Yeah, I think that was a good take.
Hey everyone, welcome to Ripstop on the Record. I'm Jameson.
And I'm Avery. On today's episode, we'll be chatting with friends of the podcast, Matt Evans from Red Paw Packs and DIY extraordinaire Francesca Hall, one of our maker sponsors from this year. This episode is called What's in Your Sewing Bag, and we will be discussing three topics of our choosing. These can be sewing tips, sewing tools, or one more, as Jameson likes to call it, philosophical points about sewing and fabric.
It's kind of hard to explain, but this episode is really, really fun. Don't let our intro deter you at all in case you're like wondering what the heck's going on here. I would probably say it was one of my favorite out of all the last 81 episodes that we've done, at least to record. It was a blast to chat about these things. We kind of go all over the place. It's a little bit, all over the map in terms of sewing and DIY, but I think that's what makes it really fun. So before we get too far, we do need to express our condolences to the family of Hale Walkoff and the Challenge Sale Cloth organization. If you don't know who Hale was, then you'll definitely know his work, designing many fabrics for Dimension Poly and X-Pack before taking his skills and innovation to Challenge Outdoor a handful of years ago. Hale passed away recently. And we would be wrong not to acknowledge the ways that he's made our industry better. So thanks so much, Hale. And I just want to make sure we recognize that at the top of the episode.
A few other updates before we get to the episode. Ultralight Venom Stretch Mesh Eco is out now. That's right. One of our favorite UHM WPE stretch materials is now including 100% recycled nylon, and it's out and you can buy it. So go check it out on our website.
I just made a pack with that mesh and it's awesome. It reacts just like the old one did, but it's kind of cool to know that it's now partially recycled. I also want to tease some new kits. I don't want to give too much away. You know, we like to keep things under wraps a little bit, just also make sure that we don't lead you on too much. But I just did some tutorial video recording with Isaac this week and going to do some more next week. So we've got two new kits coming to you hopefully this winter. That's what we're planning is. I'm not going to give you any dates so you don't get too stuck to it. But keep your eyes peeled. It's going to be pretty sweet. Really excited. There's two really great kits coming out.
And lastly, we want to say a huge thank you to all of our listeners. We recently reached 100,000 listens, which is a lot of DIY MYOG listens, and it couldn't have been possible without you. This idea was kind of a silly idea born out of some beers after work. With all of us, and we honestly can all collectively say we never thought we'd be celebrating this, but thank you everyone for sticking around for the crazy DIY ride and for listening and supporting us. We really appreciate it, and it truly means a lot.
Yeah, the podcast is so much fun. I mean, I feel like it's sometimes it doesn't feel like work, which sounds really corny, but like this episode, it's just cool to talk to fun people about DIY. And it's also really fun to think about us influencing people in a positive manner. It's like the most inspiring to think when people send a message and they're like, I love this episode. Thanks so much for doing this. It's pretty cool. As always, like, comment, rate, subscribe, review, or whatever your app of choice asks you to do when you want to support a podcast. Let us know how you like episodes or what you want to hear about. Send us a message or an email on Instagram or on your email thing. But yeah, let us know if you like the podcast. And on to the main part of the episode.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Ripstop on the Record. I'm Jameson.
And I'm Avery.
And we have two guests. Welcome, Francesca.
Hello.
And Matt.
Thanks for having me again.
Of course. So we have a couple friends on today, as you've heard, both voices you've heard before on the podcast. Francesca Hall, fantastic maker. Go check out the episode that she did with Delaney Dangerfield on our recent episode about how to make apparel. I don't remember the number, but we'll link it later. So welcome, Francesca. We're glad you're here. And today, not about apparel. We get to talk about all your gear making stuff.
Yeah, I'm really excited.
And then Matt, I don't remember the last time you were on. It's been a little while, but maybe the most notable episode is our 1 year anniversary where we did the community maker challenge and we saw all sorts of crazy stuff.
That was a blast. Honestly, that I've been on here a couple times. That was the most fun. I think it's been at least a year, perhaps. I mean, I've seen you guys since, but it's been a year, I think, since the last pod.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you back. So today's episode, I'm sort of stealing the topic from one of my favorite podcasts called Trail Runner Nation. The episode that they have is called Drop Bag, or like What's in Your Drop Bag. So for the ultra running, trail running world, if you're doing one of these races, then you normally have a drop bag at aid stations where you can put water bottles and new shoes and a new shirt and just kind of stuff like that. So I'm kind of co-opting this idea to the DIY sphere where the four of us have come up with our own kind of DIY drop bag conversation topics or items or tools or things like that. These could be physical items like a component or a tool, but they can also be more like philosophical, more like, you know, the DIYer spirit, something like that. So we're going to go over all four of our topics today and kind of have a chat about what the DIY stuff that we have. So also, other exciting things that Avery is in person this time.
Yay!
You're actually in Durham. This is fun. All right. So to kick it off, I'm going to go over to Matt. What is your, not in any, I guess probably not in any particular order, but what's the first conversation topic that you want to talk about in your DIY drop bag?
Okay. The first thing for me is after doing this for so many years, I'm using scissors a lot. My hands hurt. My hands are always hurting. They are constantly in pain. I'm getting calluses. It's a bad time. I mean, it became like a kind of an issue. So my first thing, electric rotary blade. Yes, I have the props. This is $30, saves my hands. It saves my fingers. It is so good. It cuts through UHMWPE, Dyneema fibers, the ultra fibers. It does that pretty well. It works on stretch mesh even, which is really hard to cut. Just a game changer. I mean, for $30, I mean, you just can't beat it. And there's kind of three items all in one here. I have another one behind me. It's like the big scary version of the small one. The big scary version is great for stack cutting. It's more expensive, but it's super worth it. And then finally, this is a brand new addition. This is Kevlar or fiber optic scissors. So if you're cutting those really tough fibers, the HDPE, UHMWPE, this has little micro serrations. It just does a perfect job. Now, I wouldn't want to cut like all the pieces for a bag out of this. I mean, look at the blades. I mean, they're small, right?
Yeah.
But it works really well for relief cuts, for cutting cord. I can't recommend it enough. I can't believe I didn't have this. And this is $15. This is super worth it.
What's the brand?
No name Amazon brand.
You said fiber optic. I was like, oh, internet scissors.
Yeah.
Fancy.
Yeah, it's used for cutting wire as well. I haven't tried that. I'm not an electrician. I don't know. But it works for fabric, and that's what I liked about it. And it's just so quick. It's so quick. It's almost shocking how quick the serrations work. So it's worth checking out. Like, combined $50. Save your hands. And maybe like you don't care and you're making one bag a year or you're doing one project a year, then who cares? It doesn't matter. But I mean, I have taken a beating on my hands and I'm kind of using small things I can throw money at to like try to fix my body. And that's kind of part of the theme of my topics here is like fixing small problems with like good, cheap little solutions.
I saw your electric rotary cutter in your stories a while ago, and I think I messaged you because I had just spent like an hour trying to cut the venom mesh, and then you did it in like 5 seconds, and I was like, what is this?
I don't want to take us down a rabbit hole here, but I know that, Francesca, you just posted to your story that you got new scissors. Have you tried them out yet?
I did. I got the LDH scissors. They're like, I thought that they were going to be similar to just like Friskers or Ginger or whatever you can buy at like Joann's, and they are not. They're super heavy And there's something about like the blade. It is cutting like crazy. I haven't cut the Venom mesh, but maybe I will during this episode and just see if they're holding up.
Yeah. Good. So I'm really glad somebody brought this up because I almost made this one of my things to talk about, and it would have been bad. Like, alignment is totally cool too. But this is a great topic because I've been doing a lot of cutting of the Ultralight Venom Stretch Mesh Eco. Shameless plug here for that fabric. Go check it out. And it's just a pain in the butt to cut. Like, it just is always generally awful. And we have good scissors here, and we have like kind of the small serrated ones like the mattress showed. We have bigger ones that Carter bought himself a while ago. We have like the really nice, like, they're not titanium, but like the really fancy ones. And yeah, so like the electric cutter is, oh my, that was clean. Francesca's doing live testing here. But yeah, Matt, that's a great point. So I have a question about the bigger one. Is that just like, is that like a table saw that you have back there? Or like, what's the bigger version of that one?
It's exactly this. It's a octagonal blade. Uh-huh. But it's just increased in size. I think the diameter is like maybe 3 inch. Oh, okay. Versus this is about 1.5 inch, maybe.
Sure.
It just lets you fit.
Does that plug in?
It does. And so that's why I recommend this one first, is this does not, I mean, this just charges. So it's super easy. You just charge into the wall, and I haven't charged this for weeks. It's lasted probably 8 hours of use, and it still hasn't needed a charge. The other one is like cumbersome.
Sorry, how often do you replace the blade on that? Are there replacement blades, or how does it work?
On the big one, there are. On the small one, there are not, that I know of. You can probably still do it. I just haven't yet.
So when your blade is, I mean, how long have you been using yours, and how is the blade?
This one I've had about a couple months. They all technically have a self-sharpening feature. So if you look kind of up there at the top, this is technically the bottom, but that's how you're going to see it. Right up here at the top, there's a little sharpening stone. So it's supposedly, as it's spinning, it's sharpening. And the bigger one does the same thing. So in theory, you won't need a new blade for a long time, which is kind of a cool little bit about it. But ideally, you probably replace it every now and then.
I think I need... I meant to buy that after you first posted about it, and it just, like, slipped my mind. But I've had so many just, like, struggles cutting through the UWHMPE. Did I do it correctly?
Close enough.
Fibers. Yeah, I don't know. Some collection of letters. That, like, anything to alleviate that frustration. And I actually just taught a class on the trail running pack, and we used your Venom mesh for the pockets. And I ended up just cutting out the pockets for everyone because they were so frustrated using just like crappy rotary cutters to like get through those fibers. And I was like, I don't want this to like scare you off from gear making.
Yeah.
Does anyone else have any other cutting related objects, or should I go? Okay.
Go for it.
Cool. I just wanted to stay on topic since we were already talking about blades, but I have a trusty X-Acto knife. This one probably looks like a little fancier than your normal, but
nice. It's got the grip on it and everything.
No.
So yeah. I went ergonomic.
I went to art school, and I'm pretty sure this was like the number one thing at the top of our art supply list. I like luckily didn't have to buy a lot of books, but you have to buy a lot of art supplies. And I love my X-Acto knife. I just think that it's just a handy tool to have on deck. Like sometimes you make that cut with the rotary. Like I just have a regular rotary cutter, and sometimes there's like one little piece of fiber that you didn't get, or like corners. And I just think that this is really easy. I also love things that are more sustainable. So the fact that you can buy like 100 of these blades and then just replace it seems a lot easier to me than, I don't know, sharpening scissors or paying to have scissors sharpened. And we've had that conversation that getting your scissors sharpened professionally is almost like buying a regular pair of scissors. But I'm like slinging this thing around. I should put the lid back on it. I will say this is probably, I was like, oh, I need a fancy X-Acto knife.
Can I hold that?
Yeah. So this one was like a little more expensive, but honestly, I do have a hard time like just tightening it sometimes. It comes loose, but I like having just an X-Acto knife on hand for, like I said, cutting those one little fiber that got stuck or webbing or really whatever. I just think that it's a staple that I've been ingrained to always have on hand, and it's good to have on hand.
This thing is beefy.
This reminded me, I also have an X-Acto knife in my kit that I've used similar to you, just like a lot of things if there's a little bit that I hadn't gotten, but I've also used it to cut through foam. I've had a few accidents with a rotary cutter cutting foam where I actually have some scars on my finger from that exact thing happening twice. And so I realized like something about the rolling, it's easy to kind of like go off kilter and like cut, but with an X-Acto knife, the just the way that I'm cutting, I'm a lot less likely to slip. But in addition to that, this is very similar to an X-Acto knife. This was not on my list, but I'm in my sewing room, so I'm grabbing my toys.
I think I like that one better.
I bought this as a seam ripper. It's like, it's basic. It's not quite an X-Acto knife, but I was so sick of dulling the blade on my seam rippers.
It's like a
and
scythe.
So this has a replaceable blade. Yeah.
I didn't even know they made replaceable seam rippers.
Yeah, it's really handy. It's real, like, I hate wasting plastic. And so I don't want to have to throw away like the whole seam ripper just because the blade got dull. And this is, I think I got this from Wawack, and it was just like a reusable seam ripper with, and it comes with like three additional blades. I haven't actually had to change a blade yet. But
nice. What's the brand of
that
one?
Very similar to that.
You just said it was from Wawack.
It's from Wawack. It just says Stainless Pakistan on it. So I don't know what brand that is.
Top brand, that one.
We'll try to drop all
I'm familiar with that one, actually. I've seen it a lot.
I'll find the actual link and I can send that to you.
That's a nice thing because normally I'm breaking these. Like I'm breaking the little like sharp pointy end.
Yeah.
And then I'm just like, all right, $2, get another one, I guess.
Yeah. It's a lot of plastic waste from those handles.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not, they're not the strongest either. For being like normally overbuilt, they're not like incredibly durable.
No.
So we've kind of talked about it a little bit, but this kind of reminds me of something that I do subconsciously, which is not a point that I have on my list, but I'll bring it up anyway, which is that like I definitely cut different fabrics with different things. Like if I'm working with sil poly, then like a rotary cutter or like duller scissors, totally fine. Whereas like I started a couple months ago labeling our scissors here, like with the date that I put them in the makerspace. Because a while ago, because we have four different like stations, four or five stations. And there were scissors, like scissors, thread snips at every single one with like a marking device and, you know, a few things at each one. But then it started floating around and I have no idea which ones were dull and crappy and which ones were fine. So I'd go to like cut something and then I'd just be like, just jamming up the scissors. I'm like, what is going on? So I just like threw all of them away one day. Sorry, world. And then just like got new ones, labeled them. I was like, this is the date, only use the correct freaking scissors, please. But I've noticed that I do it differently depending on the fabric. Do other, like if I'm cutting ultra venom stretch mesh, I'm going to get like the really nice, like little serrated ones. If I'm cutting sil poly, then I can use like a rotary cutter. If I'm using the standard scissors, I can use like most laminates that are not UHMWPE based. I definitely have like a different cutting device for different fabrics. Is that similar for everybody
100%.
Else?
I think I've got a dozen pairs of scissors at least, maybe 20. I mean, no joke. I've just collected them. They're not that expensive, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, not at all.
Yeah.
I for the most part, I use my rotary cutter for like 95% of fabrics. I did recently get, I just use like a Ulfa. I buy my scissors at Joann's with a 50% off coupon, but, this is called a pinking blade. And so it cuts with little like, triangles cut out. And so I will put this on my rotary cutter when I'm using, for example, sil nylon, which frays a lot. What was the last one I did? My quilt. I used the
membrane.
Membrane 10 or 15, both of which fray just frustratingly. And so I cut it with my pinking shears just to kind of keep the raw edges from fraying until I was able to burn them or enclose them.
Yeah, it makes sense. Despite how many apparel episodes we have, there are always things where I'm like, oh yeah, the apparel people have like some hacks that the gear people do not, like pinking shears and stuff. We don't have any of those in here, despite having 30 pairs of scissors in the other room and like all sorts of weird stuff, like hot knives and random stuff. Like we don't have a single pinking thing in there, rotary cutter, scissors, or otherwise.
It's super helpful for anything that frays.
I was just going to toss it over to you, Francesca, for the next one. What is your first thing that you have in your bag?
I have one that kind of I can connect it to cutting things out. So I use a projector for sewing, and I did talk about this in my apparel episode and got very excited about it. But I really like it because, it stops me from having to print out patterns. And I know a lot of gear folks are essentially, you can work with just rectangles and like measure on your fabric. However, it's really a pain to make sure that you're measuring accurately, getting those nice clean right angles. And so I use my projector to project my pattern onto the fabric, and then I cut out. It makes it really easy to mark notches and like webbing placement, because I can just use chalk to mark directly on it without having to like lift up a pattern piece. And that's also really nice for things like when I made two down quilts this summer, and I needed to mark the baffle placement. And I was so concerned about getting those baffles equally spaced on the outer and lining. So I wanted the baffles to line up properly on both pieces. And so on Illustrator or Inkscape, which is a free version, I just mocked up my baffle placement and projected directly onto my fabric. And I could just mark those lines without having to like sit with a ruler and measure every, 6 inches for hours.
That's pretty revolutionary. I feel like, this is a universal fact that cutting fabric or cutting your pattern and then putting it on your fabric and then cutting your fabric always takes the longest.
The worst.
So I'm sure that you've probably like saved many hours of cutting and just marking and tracing by not having to do that. And also like you're saving paper. You're saving money going to Staples or having it printed on A0 or whatever. So that's great. I'm mad jealous. I know that Jameson was going to try to get one for a makerspace.
I did. There's actually a projector over on that side of the, somewhere around this office that I told Jason, I was like, hey, I'm going to buy a projector one day. And he was like, what are you talking about? Like, just can we buy one?
Have you used it?
No, I haven't set it up yet because it was on the apparel episode. So since then, it's not been that long in the grand scheme of things. It's longer than I thought.
I think a lot of people think it's like more specific to apparel because you're more likely to be using patterns. And I like, there are a lot more gear patterns coming out nowadays that like you print and tape together or whatever. But even just things like marking placement lines, it saves so much time, and it also ensures more accuracy because then it's like lined up properly.
What do you use for like the first problem that I think about, which is true with any time you're doing patterning, but it's where my mind goes, like keep making sure your fabric doesn't move when you're projecting onto it. What do you use for like the corner weights or things like that?
I use these washers that I bought at Home Depot that are they're like 35 cents each, and I just have them in a few different sizes. So like these are my bigger weights. And then I use these much smaller ones. And I walked down the washer aisle at Home Depot, and I just bought a bunch of them. And I scatter them throughout like the fabric. And some I'll do it inside the pattern piece and outside, because you do need to make sure that everything's laying flat. And then if that's not enough, then I grab like, my water bottle and some knives and scissors, everything heavy around the room. I'll just lay it out.
That's smart. I like that a lot because we have that problem here. Like on the main line, they just use bean bags to cut the fabric, but bean bags can be really big depending on your pattern piece. So the washers are a great call, because especially something circular, I feel like often fits within pattern pieces really nicely.
And they're flat, so you don't have extra height too.
Yep. That's really smart.
Would do pretty good as well. Or I have like this stuff called Starboard I got from an old job, like that we're just throwing away. And I was like, that's interesting. It's used for like boat exteriors or something, but it's like an inch thick and just like a thick, dense sheet of plastic. And that works really well. Same as wood basically, but it doesn't scratch anything up or fray it as you put it on. So that's kind of a nice feature of that. This is Starboard. So again, this is like, I took this out of the dumpster. It's very expensive to actually buy this stuff, but it's just a really dense, thick plastic and it's smooth.
Yeah.
Oh, that does look nice.
Yeah.
It's got a lot more surface area to like lay flat.
Yeah. As I was going to say, I use our like acrylic rulers a lot here to like cover like a hole. If I'm doing like a long straight line, I want to get like as much as it flat as possible. Yeah. These are good tips. I think we might have to go buy some washers.
Yeah. What's in your bag, Jameson?
All right. I got a prop. Let me go get it. Hold on.
Oh boy.
Down below.
All right. Hi everybody. Hello. So this is my prototype running vest that I've talked about so far. There it is. But the point here that I want to make is that my first point is making sure that you fine tune your fabric application knowledge, because I make a lot of packs. It's kind of what I do, I guess. I don't know. I've made too many, but I feel like the right fabric application for the pack is extremely important. And so whenever my first point for people is make sure you do your research and you ask questions and you look at what's popular in the market and what you like when you're looking at designing the right pack. So for example, this is for my run in a couple of weeks and I want it to be like 10 liters, but easily compressed depending on where we are. It's like we're going through a wilderness area. So I'm going to have like an emergency bivy and it's going to be pretty cold. So I need like my layers and stuff like that. But also like, for the first half of the day, like I'm probably not going to need that stuff when we're on fairly public access, like easily accessible trails. So I want something that could compress really easily, which means like the fabric has to be pliable enough. But I also like, we're going to be going through some really thick parts of the trail. So I want it to be durable enough. So that's kind of the whole point, is making sure you're choosing a fabric. So I choose I chose the 210D HDPE with Dyneema, or I guess it's not HDPE, but yeah, you know what I mean? 210 grid stop with Dyneema, because I wanted like the Dyneema made it a little bit cooler, I thought, but like the fabric is pliable enough. It's super durable. The coating is nice on it. I think it looks pretty good. Like a version of this is what Black Diamond uses for their distance 8-pack, their own version. It's not the same one that we have, but so yeah. And then obviously the Venom Ultra Stretch Rush Eco on the bottom. I do need to give a shout out to Tim. I've used elements of his pack for this one. I changed a handful of things and done a few things differently, but mainly I just didn't really feel like working out darts. So I used his pattern for the darts down here because I had too many prototypes that did not go great before I had the darts. So yeah, check out fabric application stuff. Be intentional about your research. Look at things that are popular out there, like what pack companies are doing, see what works. I also need to give Natural Pack some credit because I told Levi, to be fair, I texted him first, but their straps, like I made these, I consulted him on the, like this is half Natural strap from like here up and then like running vest on the side. So it has like the rib cage pockets and everything.
But you have some anchorable cord locks, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting to me. I don't see a lot of running vests, but I feel like this is like a little innovative. Like you don't see that anchorable.
So I got to give Levi some credit here too. So I'm going to put cord ends down here, which I'm going to link 2-in-1 here. This is actually one of my points, is like honorable mentions, is that I love cord locks. Like here, I just think it looks so much cleaner to have like a cord lock instead of a knot. So, but like I said, this is the prototype, but this was Levi's idea to do 3 different attachments. So for people listening, this pack, if you think about a running vest, it goes kind of under your rib cage and out to your back. The attachment there, a lot of people do lacing. So it's one cord that tightens all the way down, but your kind of circumference of your chest from like under your armpit down to a bit lower is pretty different. Like your rib cage narrows as it goes towards your stomach and your side. So these are 3 independently anchored cord locks. So you can tighten them independently, all shot cord there. So yeah, that was Levi's idea when I was consulting him if he had ever made wing straps before. He didn't confirm or deny if they have made them. He just said, this is what I'd recommend. but yeah, so cord ends are a big one. That's an honorable mention for me, is put cord ends, just because I think they look really clean. They do add like a gram or something. But you know, they just look great. But yeah.
The plastic aglets, that's mm-hmm. worth it.
Yeah. It's yeah, exactly. Cool. Like these, I have one here. Just like they go, for people listening, they're little plastic pieces that you can kind of pinch over the end of your cord. And it just makes it look really, really clean instead of just like doing an overhand knot.
You do have to make sure that you like have it really secure and you tie the knot on your shock cord well enough, because yesterday my husband was like, I made him a coat and I was being fancy. So I put the cord stopper at the end and he like pulled on it and it just popped right off. And I was like, dude. So
yeah.
now he just gets knots. He doesn't get the nice cord stoppers at the end.
I also really like the zipper slider pulls. Like we have the bean puller and things like yes. that. Those are nice. Sometimes just like you have to have a cord end, but yeah, put your knot in the end or like bunch it up kind of in the in the cord end piece. But yeah, Matt, I wanted to ask you specifically about fabric application stuff as a fellow pack nerd, I guess we could say. You've made one or two in your career. What would you add to fabric application experience?
I mean, I think you nailed it for the trail running pack. I mean, that was just the correct choice for that. And like three or four different ways, it was the right choice for the packability, the durability. You could probably roll it down to nothing. Yeah, that was correct. I think if you had chosen like another kind of laminate, it wouldn't have really made that much sense. Like, I love these ultra fabrics and I make a lot of stuff out of them. It doesn't make as much sense as any kind of grid stop that's kind of soft and plush, or supple rather, for that kind of thing. But yeah, it's important to know when to use what. And honestly, it's an ongoing like learning process, because I'm always trying to sort that out myself. And for me, it's a little easier because the people come to me and they say, hey, I want this. And I'm like, great. Okay, so you're the 10th, 15th person that's told me, hey, I want this. Well, now I know what to sell because that's what everyone wants. So that helps me in that way. But when I do the personal projects, like, I'm still learning that for apparel. I just recently picked up like 70 apparel fabric yards, like all sorts of wacky stuff, mega cheap. I just filled an entire shelf with it. And I was just like, right, okay. Now I have a lifetime of clothes. Who was it? The Rain Shed or one of these apparel companies. Tim, of course, shout out Tim. We got to shout Tim out. He put a link out on Instagram. He's like, yo, this solar weave is $2 a yard. I'm like, right. Okay. Let me get 20. And then let me get 20 of this. And I fill up an entire shelf of stuff.
Did you pay like $100? Cause Rain Shed shipping is like, you could buy a spool of thread and you pay $20 for shipping.
I could have misspoke. It could have been somebody else, but I literally got 75 yards of fabric for $190.
With shipping.
Wow. All right.
With tax. Like, it was very cheap. So that's why I did it. And then now I can kind of mess about and learn like, okay, what makes sense for what, and what fabric works for shorts or shirts, or, you know, I've kind of done one of everything a little bit at this point for clothing. And not all of them are very good. Like, I'm wearing my best pair of shorts. But even these, like, they're the nylon.
Tasman nylon.
And they're great. Yeah, they're super short. But they're just not like, I don't know. I didn't love the choice. I wanted something a little like more quiet. So I'm hoping that like, I'm not just like when I get up at 3 o'clock in the morning to finally go to bed, I'm not sloshing around my pants, waking up everybody and the dog. Right. So it's like, I want to figure out something that's like, you know, a nice middle ground that's tough, but light and still like not super loud. So I'm starting to sort like figure out those kind of issues for this new realm of apparel. Cause I don't know anything about apparel, like pack fabric talk all day, but it's like the whole sector. Yeah. Oh, I'm insane. I wouldn't recommend my strategy for purchasing fabric for anybody else. I'm completely insane. Behind the camera is 30, 50 rolls of fabric leaned against the wall. So yeah, I don't recommend that to anybody. But $200 for me for buying material for the business and to kind of learn is like, right, okay, I can do that. I'll, you know, it's not that big of a flex. You know, it's like $180. So, but it is nice to have something to mess and practice with and do little projects around the house or reupholster my car or something like that.
You made one other good point, Matt, not one, but another one I'm going to touch on specifically is sound of fabric. That's one that can be really hard to portray like on our end, trying to help people with that. But that was another important piece for me on the running pack is like, you don't want to be running around just like hearing like every step you take. Yeah. It's incredibly annoying to hear like DCF shift around the whole time. It's just not right. Acceptable.
I was gonna say that about DCF because it is still all the rage, but for a while I felt like every single product on the market was made out of DCF. So I was like, okay, fine, I have to try it. And that was the most shocking thing for me when it came. I was like, it sounds like you are just like crinkling a paper bag every time. and it's grown on me, and I do really like DCF, but oh my God, that was
Matt's got fabric ASMR.
I vividly remember just like opening it and being like, this can't be nice. Like this feels like it's like, it just felt very like plasticky. And I was like, this can't be that durable. And obviously it is. And I do really like it. And it's held up super well, but the sound took me forever to adjust to.
Yeah. It gets better. It's just always kind of loud. And like on my last couple trips to Colorado, like it got below freezing and I'd wake up and like my bag would just get kind of frozen. And I was just like extra, like it's almost like ice is coming off. And I don't, maybe it was, but it was like definitely the fabric. So it's got drawbacks, of course, right? And that's my problem with the Supplex nylon. I love it. It's comfortable. It's durable. It's great for swim shorts, which is how I use my Learn MYOG shorts here. But it's like, it's just kind of loud. Like when I'm walking around the house, I'm just like, my like legs are hitting each other and they're just swishing back and forth. And so I'm looking for something that's like more like the athletic dry fit shorts that, so hopefully I got it in my 70 yards of fabric and I'll make some shorts with that.
I hope so too, Matt. I really do.
Everyone's getting shorts for Christmas is basically what you're saying.
I just picture you like sitting in your like fabric storage space, just like like sliding the fabric together. Like, what does this sound like?
Yeah. I know, that'll do. A new game for social media where we just like record fabric sounds and have see people guess identify what fabric it is.
That's coming, a good idea.
Coming soon
fan
to an Instagram near you. Awesome.
I'll show you.
Well,
oh, we're going on a
that
tour.
Back right there, that's 70 yards of fabric rolled up all in one. I know it's mega far, but I can't move too much.
Well, yeah, I'll have to post a picture on your Instagram later.
I mean, I'm also a fabric hoarder. I'm not trying to take a high road here. I if you're listening, I did slide, but behind me is about 100 yards of fabric, but it's not the same. I buy like a yard and a half to 2 yards max at a time. And if I'm buying technical fabric, then like a yard will get you a pack. You don't need to go super. Actually, I made a pack out of, I had only bought half yards of a bunch of your fabrics during your sale last year to try out. That was my way of like, okay, I've never got my hands on DCF. Let me touch it. And I just like ordered a half yard and I was able to like make a pack out of just like my half yard bits of a bunch of different fabrics. So I go the opposite of Matt.
Behind us, Avery, I think there's like 100,000 yards of fabric. I don't know how to calculate that. Let's go to the next one. Who's got Matt? What's your next item on your DIY drop bag?
Oh, okay. Next one. This is going to seem really silly until you do it, and then it's not. A new chair. I had a chair. Very fast 10-second story. I bought a chair in Tallahassee my freshman year of college. I went and picked it up. The guy is like covered in tattoos, smoking cigarettes, you know, nice guy, sells me the chair, $50. He's like, hey, I cleaned the chair. Don't worry. The chair is soaking wet. I had to dry the chair with a fan inside our garage for about 5 weeks. Chair never truly dried. Anyway, I kept the chair for 7 years. Really comfortable, fantastic chair.
Did it dry out throughout the time?
Eventually dried out. It took many weeks. It eventually
been
dried
wet
out
for seven years.
Yeah. It, you know, mold. I couldn't tell you, but I will say it was a very comfortable chair and I kept it. And when I moved across the country three separate times, Florida to Colorado, you know, whatever, I did a lot of moves with that chair. And I, in fact, had it till about 2 weeks ago. Everything started breaking. 7-year-old chair. So it broke. The arms broke. The reclining broke. I'm all about being cheap and thrifty. So I was like, okay, maybe I'll get something really inexpensive. I was like, you know what? I sit in this chair like 70 hours a week. I'm going to get a nice chair. I got like a used chair. I still didn't go crazy, but this is the new one.
Ooh, it's red. You got the red paw packs.
Yes.
So I feel like investing in something that you're going to use like for work every hour that you're working, except for when you're standing. And then also when I'm like just sitting down, eating dinner or playing a game or something like that. It was so worth it. I mean, I was getting back pain from the old chair, and this has been like a huge improvement. So I cannot recommend getting a better workstation chair enough. Like, 100% worth it. No matter your job or what you're doing, totally worth it.
I'm going to add on to that, that rolling chair specifically, which you have, is a game changer for sewing. When I first started sewing, I was just at my dining table with like a sedentary dining table chair. And I was getting up so much. And I like, we had carpet and you could see like the carpet was starting to like get disheveled from like where I was constantly getting up. So like I did, I didn't get a fancy chair, but I got a rolling chair. And that was a big game changer because now I can just like slide to get all my tools or roll between my main machine and my serger, things like that. That was a big game changer for me too. And that's similar to what you're saying, Matt.
Yep. And that's why I've got all like the main machines right here to my left and then one behind me, one in the corner, one right here. I mean, that's why I've set this up this way, is that I can just roll from one spot from like my computer desk area all the way to the bar tech machine or all the way to the needle. Like, it's like a really fast spin to move station to station. And normally I'll just like throw stuff on the table and maybe I'm working here. Oh, I got a piece over here. Like, I'm really close. So it makes it really fast to just roll around. I can also recline, which I couldn't really do.
Oh,
so it's worth it. It's worth the investment, I think.
I think it'd be fun to put like a GPS tracker on your chair and just see you're zigzagging around the sewing room.
Maybe that'd be a live stream from the ceiling.
That'd be fun.
Live stream down.
Yeah. Yeah. The chair changes like your body position around sewing a lot too, which I think people don't say they don't talk about enough because it's like kind of a weird thing, but I've noticed a lot of people that I've taught to sew, like that have been around the office, like, hey, I really want to make this. Whenever they sit down, like, I've never found out a way to tell people this without making it sound judgmental, because it's not at all. Just like a new person sits down to sew and like it's kind of like their body position is just all wrong. Like they sit down, they're kind of like askew, or they're just like one hand is like through the back of the machine, the other one's like pulling the fabric from the front. Like just sit normally. Like just, and like I feel like a chair changes that a lot too. Like when we got the same chairs all the time, not you, Francesca. Just like when,
I never sit normally.
But what about when you sew? Like, are you like coming? No. Well, maybe this is why I haven't told anybody, because it doesn't actually matter. But I feel like the chair is important to help people. Like, you kind of do, like, you have to have your foot on a pedal. You do want to get like both hands, you know, balanced on the fabric somewhere, not like reaching over the top of the machine, like pulling out the back. Just like, you know, a good chair does help with like helping people understand how to sit at a machine.
I will say, just to tack on to this long chair conversation, I recently got a standing desk and I don't have a chair that can go up and down. I just have a regular desk chair. I'm not that cool. And it's also a cute chair. So like sometimes cute chairs don't go up and down. But I'm also really, I'm 5'2", so I'm a short person. So like table and like, I mean, my feet are dangling right now in this chair that I'm sitting in, but sometimes it's hard for me being short to get the right chair to table ratio. And I will say, since I've gotten my standing desk, I am adjusting it a lot, but I'm like, oh, this feels a lot better.
Yeah.
Just like having the right, I don't know, like torso length to the table, to the sewing machine. Cause like, you know, it sits up a few inches off of the table and then you just like got to get it right. So I'm not saying you need a standing desk, but dual purpose, my desk is my work desk and my sewing desk. So I can justify it, but it has been a game changer for me. So yeah.
I do know a lot of sewists who like their permanent sewing setup is standing while they sew. And it's, yeah, it's, and it like, it makes sense, especially if like Jameson was talking about like you having the two hand position and being able to really like manipulate the fabric or whatever it is that you're working on. That can be really helpful to like set yourself up correctly.
Yeah. And it's almost easier to like stand over it almost than be like too short.
Yeah.
And have it above you. Cause you want to like look down almost and see what you're doing, but yeah.
Every time I sew a pack and I sew the body of a pack to the back panel, I am standing. And my machine actually has a feature that lets me sew without using the foot pedal. It's a like quilting feature, because a lot of quilters, if you're quilting your own quilt, like you're doing the lines,
yeah,
you're doing like 10
massive
feet
yeah.
of, yeah, big stretches. And so mine just looks like a little arrow button and I can still adjust the speed. And so I will like purely like properly position myself to have both hands on, because I'm 5'3", really, like I'm also very short and it's like hard to get that angle that I need. And sometimes I'll use the presser foot, but usually I'll just set it to go at like a slow speed, like consistently. And then I can focus all of my energy on just making sure that I'm getting the right seam allowance and then I'm getting all of my fabrics sandwiched together correctly.
Nice.
That's cool.
It's a lot to think about here with just like tables and chairs. Yeah. Who knew that we were going to go down this route of Office Max furniture or whatever, but here we are.
I sewed that running vest on Friday. We have every other Friday off. So this Friday came into the shop and I was sewing for like 4.5 hours, I think. And like the rest of the day, I was just like, stretching my shoulders out. I'm like, why am I so? I'm like, oh yeah, I was literally like hunched over like a little gnome over the sewing machine for 4.5 hours.
And that goes for cutting, taking it back to what we were talking about with cutting fabrics. Every time I see somebody cut fabric on the floor, I cry a little bit. I'm just like, that you're going to be in pain for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
So like invest. One thing I did that this isn't on my list, you guys, I don't even remember what my list was, but, I bought at Walmart, I bought those dining, I think they're called bed risers, but I use it for my table. And so they were like $10 for a 4-pack. And I bought the 8-inch risers because I'm short, but they also come in like 4-inch and 6-inch risers. And I just put that under my table when I'm cutting for a long period of time and I don't want to be hunched over.
Wow. Genius.
I do that too. Huge game changer.
So smart. All right. Who's got their next number two?
Let's go to Francesca.
Okay. So mine is a twofer. I'll make this like philosophical, Jameson, to match your kind of, but it's also practical, which is keeping a candle lit in the sewing room. So for the like, I'll make it the philosophical. It's like relaxing, nice vibes, the ambiance, real crazy.
The right mindset.
Yeah. It really like puts you in the mood to sew. But I cannot keep track of a lighter for the life of me. And so whenever I'm working on a project that I know I'm going to have to sear the raw edges of webbing and grosgrain and stuff like that, for the longest time, I was just like a madman going through everything trying to find a lighter. And now I just keep my nice therapeutic candle lit and I can go over and quickly just sear the edges of whatever piece I'm working with. So that one, double duty there.
How do you find like the, I'm gonna make this sound way too legit, like the rate of burning on the candle versus like a lighter, like is the, you know what I mean? Like some, I've had some lighters that like don't melt as well, or like some things like just don't seal that edge that great. What's a candle like?
Okay. So Matt told me a few weeks ago that the fiber content of the like webbing that you're using makes a bigger difference.
That makes sense.
You can tell, I clearly listened very well, but I think it was nylon burns better. That's what I took away from the conversation.
I think
it does.
I think nylon seals better. So you were right on with the weave. I think the poly weave it still will seal. You just have to use like a hot knife to really get a good one. With the nylon, you can
reseal
really
it too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is what, I know you were asking about the candle versus the lighter, but I had some webbings that no matter what I was like using my, my only options were the lighter or a candle because I don't have a hot knife. And it was still fraying like crazy. I do find that in my experience, the candle and the lighter are like comparable, but the fiber, you can contest me on that. I don't know what I'm talking about in that one statement I just said. It's just my personal experience. I like my nice candle. but the fiber made a big difference because I basically had to go back and like reseal the edges on all of the webbing on my last pack. Because I made the straps removable and I couldn't do the double fold to enclose the raw edge with removable straps. And so, I used the poly based webbing and it was, I spent the entire time on my thru hike with a lighter, just re-searing the edges because it was driving me nuts. And so I ended up just like using a strip of grosgrain to seal the edge. What are you showing us, Matt?
Right is nylon. Well, the black is nylon. The white is poly.
Okay. Well, mine was black, so I don't.
So one, basically just having the bigger weave. It's also a little thicker. That's the poly.
Oh, yeah.
The white.
Yeah.
And then the nylon's a little thinner. It's just much more tightly like wound. And maybe there's an example of poly that's not like that. But I just like the nylon a lot more because you just hit it with the lighter and smush it. And you actually get like the hot knife edge.
Yeah.
And like this came from where I bought it, wherever that was. I don't even remember. It's kind of junky, so I wouldn't recommend it. But they hot knifed it. So that's the only way I've seen it actually get a nice clean seal. I think nylon's a little better, at least for bags.
I would say I'm adding to my list. I got a like plastic organizer box. It took me 3 years to finally organize my webbing and grosgrain. But I, after the situation where my webbing was just fraying like crazy, and Matt was like, well, is it poly or nylon? And I was like, I don't know. It's just fraying. I'm trying to keep better track of like what my components actually are. And so I have them separately organized in a plastic container box. It's like a fishing tackle box, basically, but a little bit bigger. That way I actually know, okay, it's this webbing from this store that is fraying, and it's this webbing from Ripstop by the Roll that does not fray.
Some do. I'm not going to lie.
That was a joke. I was trying to be plug y'all. I don't know.
All right, let's go to the next stop on this train stop. Avery, what's your next thing?
Mine is something I've had in my bag for a while, and I love it.
I like the props this episode. This is fun.
It's a chopstick. Nice. There's, I guess, like maybe a story behind this, but I had an old roommate, and I guess she made her boyfriend ramen, and then he lost one of my chopsticks. So I was like, now I don't have a full set of four chopsticks that I never use. So I took the remaining chopstick and it ended up in my sewing bag. But my biggest pet peeve is when people don't turn their corners, like they turn their bag and they leave like little nubbins. They're not like fully turned.
What animal would do that?
Yeah. And so I use my chopstick because I was getting like a little dangerous and like just using like sharp pokey things, but then you can poke through the corner. So now I use my chopstick to poke corners. So then it's like perfectly turned. And maybe it was Miss Grisham in my sewing class in high school that like really also hated it and drilled it into my brain, because you probably like would take off points. But yeah, your corners really, I just like a sharp, crispy corner. Like, it's not enough to just turn it out and like poke your finger. It needs to be like, you need to really get in there. And this thing is long and it'll do it. And if you have a roommate who has a boyfriend who loses your chopstick, then you're in good company.
Easy.
So I mean, I'm sure there are other objects to use, but I really like my chopstick.
You can also use it to turn straps out if you like have the strap wrong side out and you poke it on the top.
Yeah. Yeah. Know what you mean. That's a good call as
well. Here's my strap turner. It's a mallet. So I'll take the strap inside out, right? And then I'll stick the end on the end of this mallet. And this is just like long enough that I can actually push the strap all the way through and then have something to stop it from getting stuck inside and then pull it out.
It's the condom method.
I need a video demonstration of that one. That bamboozled me.
I don't think you want a video demonstration of that, Avery.
Yeah, keep that one for your only sewing fans. I don't know.
This is why I bind things, that I hate poking the corners out on bags. Like, I don't, like, when I'm going to go put it in like a Rubbermaid in my camping bag, whatever, from like making a backpack, like it's gonna get crushed anyway. So like I look like, oh, like this is, I know this is good enough, so I don't normally like do the final to like push it all out. But that's why I love to bind things, because it always makes it look better when you turn it out. Like that rigidity just gives it so much more shape than like if I just tape something. And it always, I love taping seams, because I also hate, I don't like being in the middle of a process or the middle of making something and having to like take off the normal foot and the throat plate and the feed dogs and put on the binding attachment and like doing these extra steps. I really hate in the middle of a process. Like I love taping, but tape stuff always looks really slouchy or whatever the opposite of crispy is. It looks really soggy. I don't know.
Yeah, soggy. Yeah. Soggy seams.
Yeah, we don't like soggy seams around here.
Well, what's your second thing?
Okay.
Uh-oh.
It's small, don't worry. This is my favorite tool around here, I think. It's the see-through, specifically the 9.5-inch acrylic ruler, if you can see it here. But I think the size is the perfect one. We have one that's bigger, that's like 12.5 or 13 inches. We have one that's smaller, that's like 5 inches. And I just think this is the perfect size for most pattern pieces where it's not enormous. We have another one that's like 24x6 as well. And that one is nice for like the long straight lines. But I think having a right edge, like a significant right edge ruler, is really, really important. I see a lot of people still use like yardsticks or rulers that are only 1 inch wide or something. And having like a full right angle is really crucial for a lot of pattern pieces. I love that see-through. And then also, it's not on this one, but I've seen people like drill holes. And like one of my yardsticks is a hole. So that way you can do like circles, or you can do like rounded pieces. You can kind of like pin one side and then drag your pen around the other, kind of like a drafting compass or something. So yeah, just like the see-through acrylic ruler, specifically like in the 9-10 inch size, is one of my favorite tools around the makerspace. I use it. It's like my go-to ruler. We have, I don't know, like 7 different measuring devices in there, ranging from like 6 feet long and 2 inches wide to like the yardstick, the normal ruler, all sorts of stuff. But this one is definitely my go-to one. So big fan of this. What is this? Arteza patent design. Nice. Acrylic ruler.
It's a quilting ruler.
That makes sense. Thank you for knowing what that is.
All right. Let's hit the last ones. The final. Are we on the final round?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so.
Cool. Okay, we'll just start back where we started, Matt.
Yeah.
All right. This isn't a show and tell. This isn't a show and tell. I mean, kinda. I wish it was. The first two were. The second one is knowing when you need help. Like when you're out of your own capacity or you're frustrated or whatever that is. People who know me like in real life know that I'm extremely stubborn. And not in like a, you know, arrogant, oh, I'm, you know, I know what to do kind of way. More in like, I really kind of persist to want to do things the way I want to do it until it makes no sense. So I did that. I let this machine sit idle and broken for 6+ months. And every other month I'd be like, oh man, I really got to fix that. And I'd spend a couple hours here and there. And I'm like, well, it's still not working. Let me test it. Oh, now I've thrown off the hook timing. Oh, well, shoot. Let's give it a week or two. And I just did that cycle of like, let me try to fix it. And it never made sense. And I was just wasting time. I got to the point where I was like wasting like 8 hours of time, 10 hours of time. I was like, okay, nope. I'm going to pay somebody. I got a local guy. He's been fixing machines for 40 years. I've only paid for one service on all my machines for like the last 6 years. And it was just like last week. It was worth it. It was just the smart thing to do. Like I knew I needed help. It was like out of my capacity for some reason. Normally I can sort out a lot of this stuff. I threw my hands up. I was like, nope, please help. And it was like, I don't know. I'm getting better at learning when I actually need assistance. Normally I refuse it because I want to do it myself a lot of the time. And I think a lot of people get that like mantra of like, right, I want to do it. I want to figure it out. I needed somebody else to show me, and it was a good thing because I learned how to do it because you like walked me through what happened.
We're DIYers. We want to do it ourselves sometimes. We have a couple machines in here, and there have been a couple times where both Carter and Isaac have significant sewing machine experience. I mean, they're not pros, but like at the end of the day, we've had to call somebody a few times and they fixed it. They were here. Like we literally couldn't get the machine to run stitches correctly. And some pros here for 20 minutes. And like, it's been running for the last 8 months pretty smoothly ever since. It's like, well, all right.
Yep. It's a whole different skill set. You know, it's because it's kind of mechanical to do like mechanical thinking in operations for sewing in a sense and using machines, but it's a whole other thing to get these different machines with different parts all working correctly. If it's broken, it's hard to troubleshoot.
It is, because there's so many variables. Like, I mean, there's a lot of people sewing here, like I've mentioned, and so many times we're like, man, we can't get this machine to work. And like one other person comes by, they're like, your needle's backwards. You're like, I check the thread and I check the bobbin and I check the tension. I turn it off. I turn it on again. Like you forget one thing. There's like 15 variables for the machine to run well. And sometimes it takes like a trained set of eyes to see that.
Sometimes you're like, Matt, and you keep trying to do it yourself and you just make it worse.
Yep.
Sorry, Matt.
Literally, yes. And the problem is it's the most complicated, most expensive of all the machines. It's the needle feed. And so it's got these automated like cutting and back tacking and all this other stuff. Well, it turns out it makes it a lot harder to deal with. Like it's like a sports car. I explained this to somebody the other day. It's a sports car. You get a Ferrari, you drive in the Ferrari, you're like, dang, this is nice. This is fast. Maybe it's quiet or whatever. And then you're like, oh, wait. I got to do a oil change and that cost me $1,000 every time. Well, I've been 2000 miles, time to spend another grand. I got to replace a part. It's like, oh, right. Got it. That's what that machine is. And the other ones are like old clunkers and turns out they're cheaper. They're faster to fix. They don't need the maintenance as often because I don't do it that often. So it's nice that it's easier. It's carefree.
Sewing machines are a funky mix between being like, they're designed to run and get run a lot. Like they're like the Ford Ranger of like machines, right? They're designed to just like keep going, but they also are really finicky in some ways where they're just like, you put the needle in 1 millimeter off and like, it just looks like a total bird's nest. Like how do you run for 10 years straight nonstop? And then like 1 millimeter off and it's completely trash. all right, Francesca, what's your number three?
It's machine related. So I bought these, I don't know if you can see right there. These little like sticky magnet strips that I originally, so I'm a teacher. And so I originally used it in my classroom to like move stuff around on my whiteboard, like headings and stuff. And then one day I was so sick of like pins just ending up everywhere that I was like, I wonder if I could put this on my machine. And as I'm sewing and I take pins out, I have somewhere to put it right on my machine. I'm not looking for my pin dish. I'm not like, you know, scattering all over the place. And so all of my machines have these little strips at the top of this like sticky magnet that I can put pins and needles on. Because that's the other thing is with how much I switch between apparel and gear, I'm switching my needle often. And sometimes I'll change needles in between, like in the middle of a project. So like I've made several of those trail running packs, from Tim, and the water bladder pouch is made with like a super thin, slippery material that I'll want like, 75 by 11 needle. And then when I get to doing the body with the wedding, I want my like 116 needle. And so I can also just stick the needle on that, magnet strip. And I'm not losing it and trying to figure out where my needles went, where my pins went. So it's just a super cheap, like quick fix thing that just solved a little issue when I was sewing.
If you got a metal chopstick, you can
metal chopstick
on your magnet. What is that?
Is that like a fidget toy?
These are like a space rare rock. Earth magnets. I think, yeah, literally it looks like a space rock. I think I got these as a kid from like the zoo
Sharper
or
image.
Something like that. I mean, these are
the checkout line at Disney,
but same deal. And you don't have to stick it. I mean, if you have a metal machine, it'll just kind of stick on to the base or on the machine itself.
So you're telling me I need a Juki or an antique machine?
The all metal machine.
You put it on your table too.
Yeah, that is a good call.
If you have a plastic machine though, you get the little sticky magnet. Yeah.
Exactly.
And here's one
options.
More. These are neodymium magnets or something that. They're super strong little tiny magnets. And that'll hold a needle or pin, but not much else. The other stuff is great. Like the big one is great for like thread snips or like your scissors.
Oh.
We have in the makerspace, we should do, I just had this idea.
Tour.
Yeah, like an MTV, like Cribs, but in the makerspace and talk about little things that we do.
We're doing that right now.
Yes.
We have like 12-inch magnet strips that are mounted next to every sewing machine in there. So there's one in each space. And that's where you keep like the scissors, thread snips, but also for the machine, one of the machines has the binding attachment on it, and we've had troubles with our new, the new conso, not a conso issue. It's more of how Carter set it up. No offense, Carter, you're doing great. Like on the binding machine, we have, I have to tease in for that one, but on the binding machine, we like keep all the binding attachments on the magnet strip as well. So like same thing, like you just, that's where we keep every, that's why we have like a DIYer's toolkit at every machine, because the magnet strip, you can just like place it back up there. So the magnets are huge. Those are really, really nice to have. Avery, it's your third one.
Oh, mine is a little less exciting, but it's something that most people have, and it's painter's tape. I maybe it's just me and I have a hard time following my seam allowance guides. Is that what you call it?
Seam allowance?
Yeah, the little markers on the, you know, your seam allowance.
Yeah, the seam guide.
Yeah,
seam guide.
The seam guide. I use
patterns, I'm not really sure.
I like to like make it really long if I'm working with a long piece of fabric and just like tape it down the thing. For me, just following like a 2-inch line isn't enough, and I have great vision 20/20 and I just want a longer line. It's easier for me. Than that, I don't have much justification. It doesn't leave like a weird sticky residue. Sometimes I will, like you, maybe just make something without a pattern, and I just like, I don't know, maybe my seam allowance is like not what it should be, but it's what I know it is for my project. And I just like need it in a specific space. So then I create my own seam allowance in my head. And then I just use the tape. You know what I mean? And then you have your own guide versus Francesca looks like she's like getting what I'm saying or not.
You,
I don't know.
I get what you're saying. I need to back up though. If you're creating your own patterns, please account for the seam allowance. If you want everything to line up at the end, Jameson, sorry, I listened to you, Avery, and I think that painter's tape is a great tool, and I use it all the time for the exact same purpose, and I don't have 20/20 vision, and it does help. But Jameson, don't tell the good people to go make their own pattern and not include seam allowances.
No, I'm not saying don't include seam allowance. I also do need a preface. So I was actually going to tell you this anyway, Francesca. This might be the perfect time not to take away from your
help. No, we're good. We're done.
That is a good tip, though. Tape is a good call. Well, first of all, everyone listening, patterns are not evil. I don't want to make them out to sound bad. You should totally find a great pattern. And like Tim from Lord MOG has great patterns. Go listen to the episode with Francesca and Delaney, where they talk about all the other patterns that they've used and stuff. Don't be afraid of patterns. This kind of blends into my third one, actually. But I was going to tell you, Francesca, specifically, that since we last talked on the apparel episode, when I was like, I think I should really start to make stuff, I have made a pair of shorts and a 5-panel hat, a running hat. So yes. I'm slowly getting into it. Both of them were patterns, which were painful in their own right, but I made it work.
I'm very proud of you. I also love a 5-panel hat. And that is like a vice of mine, is I have too many hats that I've made. So I'm very happy to hear that you're dabbling as well.
Francesca, have you never made something with no pattern? Like,
yes, I make things without patterns all the time.
Just wing it. You know what I mean? Like zero thought. You're just like, right, this seems about right. And then you just put it under the machine. You just wing it.
Yeah, and then I finish and I'm like, oh crap, that's an inch too small because I didn't account for the seam allowance.
It's really freeing.
I have this takeaway from this conversation real quick. And if you haven't listened before, and you haven't heard me say this, I was a hiking guide. So a lot of the trips I did were mostly women. And even when we didn't have an all women's trip, we would have 8 women and 1 man. And the running kind of joke was that men will go into the woods with like a freaking backpack and just a tarp and like throw it over their shoulder, like Grandma Gatewood's best friend, and just like go out into the woods. And women are like, they want the itinerary. They want to know the elevation, the time, where we're stopping, when we're stopping, what we're eating, all those things. And I think that kind of is like, I feel like maybe women are more like, we don't want to have to do this again, or we're going to be more detail oriented. Maybe that's it. And then guys are just like willy nilly over here.
Here's my thing. Is that I am not like that in any other area of my life.
That's true.
Like I'm incredibly, like I overthink things too much. Like I need more spaces where I allow myself just to be okay with whatever happens. Cause most every other thing, like I'm very calculated. I'm very thoughtful, like to a fault most of the time. And so when I can just like go make, that's like the liberating part, just to be like, I'm going to make it and be okay with whatever it is, because like, this is an area where I need to just like not try and control everything too much.
That's fair. I think I'm the opposite in that I like don't plan for the life of me outside of like a project I'm working on. Like the joke with me and my husband is like, I literally don't know what trip we're going on until we like get off the plane. And I'm like, oh, where are we? What are we doing this week? Like, I'm just along for the ride. But like when it comes, I think my issue is I've been burned so many times by carelessness. And especially now that I've really graduated from like crappy materials, like my first several projects were just like Joann's fleeces or like quilt and cotton that I got on cheap, like stuff that I wasn't invested in. And now when I'm working with like fabric that I know is $50 a yard,
yeah,
and I want to make like, I want to make a fanny pack real quick. And I want it to be functional and I don't want to waste the money and time I put into it. That's where I'm like, no, I don't want to just wing it. I want to know that my finished thing had the seam allowances. I am so bent up on this because I have made so many little like dop kits. Like I made one that I was adamant was going to fit my toothbrush. Like I wanted a little toiletry bag and I measured my toothbrush and I was like, this is how long my toothbrush is. This is how long my little thing has to be. And sure enough, I finished and I hadn't accounted for the seam allowances. And every single time I look at that dang dop kit, I'm like, my toothbrush can't fit in there. I can't take that this weekend. So that's my like little saltiness.
So first,
need a smaller toothbrush.
Cut it off. Cut the handle off. What are you doing?
Cut the handle off.
So rule of thumb of free balling a pattern is always add half an inch. Just like I always make, if I'm truly not going to pattern it, then I'm like, it's got to be 7. I'll cut 8 and just see what happens. Because that's the point of free balling. I would be wrong if I did not fully recognize that I do have a lot of like. There is no money out of my pocket if I waste a 12 by 12 section of fabric here. And that's not fair to everybody because not everyone has the privilege that I have to just use ripstop of the roll fabrics whenever I want. So I'm not saying that you should buy Dyneema, you know, make whatever you want and throw it away. That's not something that I don't even do that. But so it would be wrong if I didn't, you know, recognize that. But this is a perfect segue to my last point, which is just this sticky note that I have, which I've nicely written. You need a fricket mentality, you know, family friendliness, fill in the whatever F word you want here to like signify
fun mentality,
have the fun it mentality. But I do think in order, especially to get going, but especially to break into new projects, like if you're really comfortable with something, you're going to do something else. For me right now, it's apparel or like maybe quilts, I've done one, like that kind of stuff, is that I kind of have to eventually just be like, I'm going to be okay with whatever the result is and just learn from it and have a really good time with it. And again, that comes from a privilege that I have of using whatever fabrics I want, but I think that's true for anybody. Like even before I worked at Ripstop and I was trying to learn to sew so I didn't feel out of place working at Ripstop, like I just was like, I just need to make, I know what I want to make, so I'm just going to start making it and see what happens. Sewing gives you a really easy feedback loop. Like, you know, when something is right or wrong, you know, when it's not missized, you normally can tell why, even if it's annoying and you're like, I really don't have to remake this whole thing, but I will. Like, you pretty much know what you did right or wrong when you see it. So just send it. I mean, really, like if you want to make a pack and you've never sewn before, you will be able to get there. I don't really want to show them on the podcast, but if somebody asked me to, I probably could bring out the first thing ever made. It's atrocious. It's absolutely horrible. Like, awful, but like you've seen my fast pack. I'm not saying it's the best in the world, but I'd be happy to show it on the podcast now.
It's
and like
really
you can eventually get there if you just say enough F it to just get there.
Yep, 100%.
I completely agree.
Yeah, sometimes like I think everyone's like that. Like we're our own worst enemy, you know. Like I think we probably have all had this experience where we show someone something and we're like, maybe not super proud, but your friend is like just freaking stoked and thinks that like you just, I don't know, built the Mayflower by yourself and that it's the coolest thing that they've ever seen. And like, you're like, oh, but this stitch isn't right. Or I got a little loopy here, or, you know, whatever, and they don't notice. They just see that you just made a fanny pack and that they've never sewn anything and didn't even know that you could do that besides going to REI and buying a fanny pack. Yeah. So I think in life in general and whatever you're doing, you can apply it. We're all our own worst enemy. And if you just like take the stigma out of your head and just send it, then it'll be a lot more freeing experience than holding expectations for yourself. I think that's like setting your expectations and just like set them real low, you know?
Yeah.
Because then you'll meet your low expectations and you'll feel a lot better about it. I think my therapist told me that.
Yeah, I'd say perfectionism is like counterproductive to acceptable end results. Like if I hadn't done that for my first 10 bags and said, yeah, screw it, at least it works, then I wouldn't be here making bags for other people. And by the way, for the customers listening, I don't freeball your bags just so everyone knows. I actually do spend a great number of hours like, you know, making sure the seam allowances are correct, for example. But when I'm doing something silly like, ooh, I need a pouch for my car, I'm just pulling out a scrap and freeballing it. I don't care at all. Like, it doesn't matter. There's seam allowance. What are you talking about? I'm going to cover the edges with ribbon anyway. You know, like, it doesn't matter. So yeah. But yeah, I think that part, the hardest part is just like trying something to completion. And you're talking about your first bag. I did a YouTube video years ago now. I was like, right, I'll show my first bag and like stuff is wrong side out. It's all like there's pieces like raw edges flipping. Like it, the seams are garbage. The straps are falling out. It's like, yeah, who cares? My first five are like that, but you know, it's improved a lot. So, I mean, that's the thing. You just have to persist.
Rome wasn't built in a day and your backpacks weren't built in the first five. So it makes sense. And I think Tim from Learn MYG, again, to mention him, his ears are probably burning right now. He has a sticker and it says respect the defects. And I'm just like, that's so good. Like, don't beat yourself up about it. Just be like, yeah, you still did it.
Yeah, I agree. I think like it's a lot of the times like, you're your own worst critic, and I think nobody else looking at it would even really notice that, like, you know, your top stitching was a little wonky or like your webbing's fraying or whatever. Like, it's such subtle stuff, and like, you have to make mistakes, and 90% of them you can just keep going without having to like seam rip and redo 10 times. Like, most of the mistakes are super recoverable, and I think people like freak out because they're like, oh no, like this isn't within this, or like, you know, my seam allowance was a little wonky, or I like snipped a like thing too far in or whatever. It's like, you're fine, just keep going.
Yeah, there's fine. That's kind of one thing I was gonna say in a similar light, is that like, unless you take your first ever pack into like the Sawtooth Wilderness or something, like, it's really unlikely that you're going to have a massive catastrophic failure that will like actually cost you your life. Like, test it out somewhere, but like, you're probably going to be okay. Like, I have bad packs that I have taken on hikes and they did last. Like, they're not beautiful and they're not ridiculously comfortable and the straps like kind of cuts into my neck badly, but like, they did last and I carried all my crap for as many miles as I needed.
I made my husband the first pack I ever made. I took on a 2-night trip, like super short weekend trip. And I made my husband take his like super big, he's like an 80-liter pack from when he was like a silly college kid who like took 3 pounds of bacon with him every weekend. And I made him take his like 80-liter pack, 'cause I was like, if this fails, you're packing my stuff out. And so I was just, that's the alternative, is if your pack does fail, take a friend so they can carry your stuff.
Yeah. All right. Who has one more point? I lost track.
I think we were wrapped up.
I think we did it.
That was it. Unless anyone has any other lingering thoughts.
All right. Well, this is really fun. This went better than I thought. I was worried that my idea might not land, but I've had a blast chatting about all these things. And as always, I leave with tips, which is so much fun.
Yeah. I'm going to need some seam rippers and magnets and lots of things. But if you're listening and you have something that you really love, you should send us a message or leave us a comment and let us know, because as makers, we only get better by kind of sharing our process and sharing our tricks. You know, we don't need to gatekeep things. It's just a magnet, right? So yeah, just ask a friend, share, and yeah, just enjoy the process.
Honestly, that's one of the most important things you can do. Like, I've noticed that recently, and like, to me, it's fun to share that on social media. But like, you show little tools like this or whatever, and you get a bunch of messages and people are like, wow, that'd be really neat, wouldn't it? And then it's like, right, we can all collectively kind of help each other tune up our efficiencies and frankly, save yourself from back-breaking, hand-breaking work, whatever that is, you know?
And asking people, like if you see somebody using a tool and you don't know what it is, just message them and say, hey, Matt, how did you cut that so quickly? How do I buy it?
Well, let's wrap this thing up. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Matt and Francesca, for being here. As always, it's good to chat with you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again.